Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello. Before we start this episode of the MMA Fan Podcast, we need to tell you about our sponsor, Free Train. Free Train do these fantastic running vests for you to run in, hit the bag in, and they keep your phone close to your chest. No more do you need to have your phone rumbling around in your pocket when you run or at an awkward angle on your arm. You can keep it on your chest with easy access to your phone whenever you go training. And what can the people do, Stu, if they want to get a vest?
Simple. Head over to www.freetrain.com. Have a look. See what you like. And when you pop it in the basket, just before you check out, pop in the code MMA fan, save yourself 10%. I mean, don't ever let it be said we don't spoil you here on this podcast. www.freetrain.com. Go check them out.
Excellent stuff. Right, on with the show.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but we've got another sponsor to tell you about. Phil Supreme. They're a nationally recognised brand who offer only the very highest quality of natural supplements. Their extensive range includes a range of medicinal mushrooms, nootropics, anti-aging products, gut support products, green powders, vitamins, and much more.
Yep, they've worked with fighters from all the top promotions, including UFC, Bellator, Brave, and Cage Warriors, with a solid reputation of providing results. So check them out on Instagram, which is at Phil_Supreme. Or their website, www.philsupreme.co.uk, and make sure you use the code MMAFAN for a cool 15% off your first order. Don't say we don't spoil you.
Hello, and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I am one half of your hosting team, Blake Harrison, and joining me as ever is
Stu Whiffin. How are you doing? Do you know what I'm thinking? Should we do it like, should we have our own corners? Should you be the blue corner and I'll be the red corner? We could do it like that. I like to think that, like,
I think that's
we're
really
coming out fighting. You're going to rain on my idea now, aren't you?
I am, just because, you know, I'm a positive guy. I'm a friendly guy. You know, I don't know why you'd have to start the conversation. Just because we're talking about a sport that is combat sports doesn't mean we need to be combative.
It's fine. It's fine. You know, do you know what?
You know, like, why aren't we just on a
fine
team?
We are. We are.
Why isn't this just a, you know, us, the listeners, yeah, we're all together as one, part of the community, you know, just working for and with each other.
I totally understand. There's absolutely no shame in being scared, Blake. I understand. Like, so
you do weigh about 3 stone
and the rest. So. Oh dear. How are you, mate?
I'm good. We were actually just having a quick chat before we press record, but we stopped because I wanted to know how you watched the card, because it sounded like you had a very busy weekend. But did you actually end up just sat in front of it Saturday because you had a busy Friday?
I did. So I don't know if you remember. Obviously, you've been doing your play, but our friend of the show, Scroobius Pip, did invite me, you, and Brian Lacey over. And obviously you was doing the play, and I think Brian was at a family thing, and so
Brian was washing his hair.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. So yeah. I had every intention to go and watch it at Pip's, and then Pip's got to do some running around for his dad, just some hospital checkups and stuff or something, and so he just didn't want to kind of have any kind of COVID type whatever you'd call it. Like, wouldn't want to be you know, at risk in any way, shape or form.
Also, it went from Pip, me, Brian and you to just you. Yeah. And he went, oh,
well, I think
this is awkward.
I think...
Gotta shift my way out of this one. How do I get myself out of the hole I've just backed myself into?
Did not think that. Jesus Christ. Oh, that's lovely, isn't it? Well, as it happened, I was knackered because I'd had a big old Friday. And yeah, so it actually worked out quite nice. My wife said, I'm going to go and watch a film in the other room if you want to watch the UFC. And I was like, okay. So sat and watched the UFC fight.
So even your wife didn't want to be with you?
No, alone, completely alone. And I've got to be honest with you, Blake, it's my favourite way to watch UFC. It really is. I don't get a lot of time on my Jack Jones. And so when I can sit and like just really get immersed in it, oh, I loved it. Not going to lie, when it got to the main fight, had a little glass of red wine, sort of celebrated it a little bit as well. But we'll get on to that. So yeah, literally right from the fight past prelims, watched the whole lot, and thoroughly enjoyed it. Yourself?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously I was doing the play, but it was really interesting that like between the matinee and the evening show, I was able to catch a couple of fights. I missed Lerone's fight. But then obviously found out about it. I've since watched it, obviously. But some of the fights were just so quick. Yeah. I was able to get in more than I thought I would to be fair, I shouldn't really say this, but the play was like the furthest thing from my mind. Watching the iPad, as always, professional. I was watching the iPad and like Chimaev and Makachev and all that. And then like I heard like a line that's only a few before I come on stage. I was like, oh shit, run around the back of the stage, get on stage and do the thing. I wasn't preparing, I wasn't warming up or nothing. I was just watching the fights, but they were incredible, and some of them like super quick. We'll get into it, but I thought it was a really good card. I missed Sandhagen Yarn and watched that on the train home, so that was a unique experience. But but yeah, overall, I thought the card was a really fun, good card. And at a great time for anyone not in the world of theatre. Yeah. So I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, it was ace. And like Pip and I were having a bit of back and forth on the WhatsApp. We moved it away from our little MM8s WhatsApp because we knew that you and Brian, you know, were out and about. So it was like, so yeah, we were still having some bants, but obviously he just didn't want me in his house, it turns out. In regards to sort of talking about what happened last night, we should say that we're recording this on the following Sunday. Should we start at the very top?
Oh, let's do it. But it's the fairy tale. Let's start with the fairy 100%. Tale. Glover Teixeira submits Jan Blachowicz and becomes the 42-year-old light heavyweight champion of the world. How did you find the fight?
Amazing. Like, I wanted Glover to win because I want that fairy tale. I want the old man going out on his shield and then, you know, what I hoped would be to then retire the champion. But we'll get up to post-fight because it looks like that might not be the case. I just thought he looked great. I think, you know, it was quite obvious that he wanted to get Jan on the floor. You know, I don't think he was... I mean, Glover's got great hands, but I think that's somewhere that Jan obviously seemed a lot more comfortable performing at. And so I think, Glover was, you know, done the right thing, took him down, used his BJJ, and got that rear naked in. And it's second round as well. Like, no messing.
I feel like the big... Can I just say, actually, before talk too much about the fight, the build-up to the fight was so brilliant. The week leading up to the fight, the interactions between the two of them, Jan giving Glover the beer from his family's brewery in Poland, like singing happy birthday to him on the stage and all that stuff. You're just like, this is what I want. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, there's always trash talk can always be interesting and it gets, you know, pay-per-view buys. And I'm sure with K Covington and Usman coming up this week, we'll see a lot of animosity and trash talk and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, maybe. I think they don't like each other. But the build-up this week, I loved it. I loved just two people at the top of their game just being really quite friendly and looking like, do you know what? If these two weren't fighting, they'd be going for drinks together and having a really nice time. And they both seem like two really good guys. They seem like two really lovely
blokes. Absolute ambassadors for combat sports. Like,
100%.
Yeah, I mean, it was... Everybody else seemed more emotional than Glover, I think. And it was only as he was sort of walking out of the octagon, I think he started it started to kind of sink in a little bit. I don't know if I just read that differently from you, but it felt like that to me. He felt like he was sort of trying to sort of hold it all together and take it all in and do the post-match chat. Where, yeah, there was talk of a scrap with Jiri, and I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, in terms of the fight that we saw between Jan and Glover, I think the thing that surprised me and the big turning point seemed to be how quickly he got him down in the first round, and Jan didn't really have an answer. That immediately, I didn't think Jan would be taken down so easily. And from that point on, there was the fear, which, and we've spoken about this recently, where I feel like one of the best things that a wrestler can do a lot of the time is put doubt in the mind of the person opposite them. And if you're a wrestler, I know Jan's not necessarily a wrestler, but hear me out. But if you're a wrestler and you fake a shot and go up with an overhand right that connects, then the striker who you're fighting is going, oh, shit, I don't know what's coming. Is it the takedown or is it the boxing or whatever? Jan's already got the dirty boxing. He's so durable. I thought if Jan was going to win this fight, it was going to be that he was knocked down hard and nearly finished in round one or two. And Jan's almost sort of gassed himself out by trying to put him away. But the durability of Glover just meant he stayed the course and was able to get a finish later down the line when Jan's tired. I didn't expect it to be like this. And I didn't expect Glover to get the takedown so easily in round one. And what happened there, I think, is that Glover's already got the threat with the kind of the dirty boxing and he does hit hard and all that stuff. And from that point on, I think Jan wasn't quite sure what was coming because Glover in the second round caught him with a big left hook that rocked him and wobbled him. And that's what then led to the takedown, which then led to the finish. And I don't know, there's a narrative going on out there at the moment that Blachowicz wasn't quite himself. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if Glover just sort of had his number.
I think it was either DC or I think it was DC that said it. And it felt... When Glover got him down in that first round, he was driving the top of his head into Jan and like just bullying him on the floor. And he looked really uncomfortable with it. Like, not that anybody wouldn't be uncomfortable with that. But, you know, he's the champ, you know, and he must have known that that was going to be an eventuality, that he was going to be, you know, on his back. And he looked... uncomfortable. So if there was, I mean, he's come out today and he's not made any excuses, you know, he's like absolute props to Glover and, you know, the better man won, you know, and he said, it's just not the end of the story for me yet. So yeah, no. You know, be interesting to see what happens. But I know when we spoke to Pip, you know, I think we all kind of entertained the idea that it'd be nice that when Glover won the belt, if he was to win the belt, he would retire. What a lovely way to go out. And, yeah, it doesn't appear to be on his radar at the moment.
No, and I mean, look, he's on what, like a... I get it. He's on a six-fight win streak now after beating Blachowicz. He must feel the best he's possibly felt in his career. I mean, I would say a Glover at, say, 35 beats a Glover at 42. But, hey, things are working for him. I mean, he's doing incredibly well. I think also you got to think he's been working so hard. He's been in the UFC for 9 years. He told a story about, I think back in 2004, the second series of The Ultimate Fighter, he was basically going to be in the house in the second series of The Ultimate Fighter, but had green card issues, so couldn't come over. And then spent a good, I don't know, what was it, something like 7 years? Then trying to get back into the UFC after that opportunity had been taken away from him. then he finally gets into the UFC in something like 2012. And from that point on, I mean, he had his championship fight against John Jones and lost that. And since then has been just kind of, you know, win a couple, lose a couple, win a couple, lose a couple. And then has gone on this amazing streak to become champion at 42. It's an incredible thing. And he's probably thinking to himself, wow, I can actually get pay-per-view buy money now. Even if I defend it against a guy where I'm, you know, a massive underdog. I'm 42. I've not got many fights left. I didn't take any real damage in that fight with Yan where you would expect him to. Why not roll the dice again and take that money? I mean, it makes it sound like I'm doing him a disservice by saying he's just taking the money if he's fighting like a Yuri Prohashka or a Magomed Ankalaev. But he will probably be the big underdog. But there's nothing to say that, you know, he got Yan to the ground with ease. I haven't seen Yuri's takedown defense tested. Uzdemir and Reyes certainly weren't testing him the way Glover would test him in terms of his takedown defense. I think Yuri's got really great movement and footwork, and he's so erratic. You don't know where the strikes are coming from. So that would be difficult maybe for Glover to pin him down. But, God, I mean, who knows? You never know. Glover could defend the belt. We don't know. We've already had one fairy tale. Why don't we sign up for a couple
100%.
More?
I mean, Glover would have gone in the underdog last night, I think.
Oh, yeah. Massively, yeah.
And so I think Prochazka, just do it. Like, I think...
Yep. I mean, but here's the thing. Here's the big thing. Glover was in the middle of the octagon. He was like, yeah, Prochazka, you're next, blah, blah, blah. In May.
Yeah.
Prochazka's already been waiting on the sidelines for, what, a good 6 months? When did he beat Reyes? 6 months ago?
Probably.
More? I don't know. So he's like a young... I don't know how old Prochazka is, but I don't think he's very old. He's probably like, I'm in the prime of my life. I want to fight 3-4 times a year. And then this 42-year-old man's just gone, yeah, you've got to wait another 6 months now. That might be like over a year between fights. He's probably thinking, oh, fuck that.
Yeah,
I don't want to do that. So now he's in a situation where it's like, okay, what do you do? Does he take a really dangerous fight against a Rakic or a Magomed Ankalaev or anything like that? Or does he wait because he was the backup guy? He's probably the number one contender. But then if a Rakic or a Magomed Ankalaev gets one or two really good wins between now and May, if that's when Glover wants to come back, who's to say he's number one contender anymore? So I think it actually puts a lot of pressure on Yuri to have another fight, which I don't think is a bad thing because he's only had two fights in the UFC. Yeah. He's beat top guys. I mean, he's beat Uzdemir and he's beat Reyes. They're two top guys. So, you know, you can't discredit him at all. He's beaten two really good contenders, two guys that have fought for titles. But I don't know. I think him against Ankalaev is almost a fight I don't want to see yet because I do think both of them could be 100%. Champions. And that's a fight I'd like to see as like a title defense for one of them. I wouldn't want it to be a number one contender fight. So then you're maybe looking at Alexander Rakic, who had a kind of flirtation, shall we say, on Twitter with Anthony Smith about fighting in December. But those two have already fought before. So I don't know. So we'll have to see how that goes. But the light heavyweight title picture is now maybe not quite as clear-cut as it was. If Yan had won, I thought it would be Yan versus Yuri in maybe 4 months or something like that. But to wait 6-7 months for Yuri to fight again, I don't know if that might be a bit too much. And Dana himself said that he's not sure what's next. Like, because I think he was asked in a press conference, is Yuri next? And I think he was like, oh, we'll have to see how that goes. So, yeah.
Well, Glover, enjoy your purse. Enjoy your 50 Gs as well, performance of the night.
Yes.
Yeah. And well, should we talk about who won 50 G's for fight of the night? And
we can do, but I mean, another thing is what happens with Błachowicz now? Like, where does he go? Like, he's definitely. I mean, he's probably got to get at least two wins to get a title shot again, and he's 38 years old, I think he is. So I mean, he's saying that there's more to come, but we'll have to see. I think Błachowicz is going to have to take a really hard fight against, for example, an Ankalaev.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be some fight, though, wouldn't it? Ankalaev versus Blachowicz. That'd be pretty special, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just looking at who Jan's fought. He's dealt with a lot of that division. So, yeah, I guess what he hasn't fought is the people like that that you don't... No one really wants to fight, and we'll get on to that as well. The reason why. So, should we touch on Should we just get stuck straight into Jan Sandhagen?
Oh, this is the one I watched on the train. I had to watch it on the train home. This, what a fight! Yeah. What a great fight! It makes me wonder about the. I mean, look, I think the right guy won. I'll just put that out there straight away, but. The scoring system in MMA, because I'm like, I scored it like four rounds to one in favour of Jan. I think Sandhagen won the first round.
I thought,
and after that,
I agree. I thought second round was tight.
Oh yeah, well that's what my point. My point is, I felt like Sandhagen won the first round, and I would say Jan did the most damage. He didn't necessarily hit him with the. I think Sandhagen probably had the most volume of strikes. But that's not damage. The damage done seemed to be the more powerful strikes from Jan. And it just made me go, God, did these loads of these rounds were really, really close. But yet, because the scoring system is the way it is, I had to do it 4-1 to Jan, which doesn't make it sound close. It makes it sound like Jan's ran away with it. But he really didn't. It was a really close and really high-level, brilliant fight. And I mean, Sandhagen, I feel so sorry for him. He's been, I think he was on the wrong end of a bad decision from the judges when they gave the TJ fight to TJ. I think Sandhagen won that fight.
But do we?
This time, I think it was the right judging decision, but I just feel for him that he's been on the end of a couple of decisions where he's done really well in both fights.
Yeah, but, you know, he was a busier fighter. You know, he was throwing constantly and he was just peppering, you know, double jabs constantly and. It never felt to me like Sandhagen was ever going to stop Jan. Like, I couldn't see. It looked like the shots he was throwing, I mean, I hope I'm wrong, like, it just didn't look like they were going to have that kind of knockout power. Obviously, we see what he done to Frankie, and we know that them knees can be devastating. But for me, them tight little check hooks that Jan throws... Everything he throws, and that power doesn't diminish. Like
the body kicks as well.
Yeah. Like I just think Jan's boxing's incredible. Like really, really incredible. For me, you know, I wanted Corey to win. Obviously, I think he's a you know an absolute dude. But yeah, it just as the fight was unravelling, Jan wasn't tiring. He never does, you know. He always seems to get stronger as the fight goes on.
Yeah.
And the more that fight opened up as well, the less and less I thought Sandhagen was going to stop him in any way, shape or form. And
yeah, I mean, I was hoping his corner, I think in the going into the fifth round, I felt like his corner was saying... it sounded a bit mixed to me, like that they were saying, like, we need you to win this round. Maybe they said that you might be winning the fight or something like that. And I thought, well, the way I scored it, and I know it must be difficult live and when you're connected so personally with the person involved in the fight, but for me, I kind of felt like if I was in that corner, what I wanted them to be saying was, look, I think you're losing the fight and I think we need a finish. Just do the Corey Sandhagen thing. Throw the spinning attacks. I mean, look what he did to Marlon Moraes. That was an unbelievable, like, spinning head kick. And then, obviously, the Frankie... I mean, he tried the knees. The knees, he did those a few times throughout the fight. None of them... I think, well, to be fair, I think one or two of them did land pretty flush, but Jan's just an absolute terminator and just took them. But I would have liked to have seen him throw a few more unorthodox strikes, particularly in the latter rounds, even if it meant he got taken down and things didn't work out for him, because he was, I think, losing the fight. Clearly. So I would have liked him to kind of just gone, you know, balls to the wall. Let's just throw everything at this. Let's throw the spinning attacks. Let's throw
he might have been tired,
kind of unique
mate.
Things that like, Sam.
He was...
Well, it might have been that as well. But the corner, from what I heard from the corner, they didn't say, you got to get a finish. From what I remember. Maybe I heard it wrong. I was on the train. But I didn't hear you got to get a finish. And I would have really liked them to try and do that. But yeah, I mean, it was still a close fight, regardless of the fact that it was clear Jan won. I don't know that. I know that makes no sense. That doesn't. Yeah. But if you've watched the fight, surely you understand what I mean when I say that it was a competitive fight the whole way through. And it was a great fight the whole way through. It wasn't like one-way traffic, but it was just clear, I felt, that rounds 2 to 5. I mean, 5 was maybe a bit 5 was maybe a bit more contested. You maybe could have scored that either way. But I think that kind of big spinning head kick that Jan landed on Sandhagen at the end of the fight, what a combo that was. I was like, look, again, it just feels like the most impactful strikes are being landed by Jan. How tough is Corey,
though? Yeah, absolutely.
He was taking some big shots and just kept coming, sticking his arms out like, what, I don't care, let's keep going. I mean, I think he's... If you're scoring the UFC game like Daniel Cormier, I think, does, he adjusts like all the star meters on the UFC game. Durability for Sandhagen has to leap up a star after that fight. He's really showcased another level of durability in himself there. And
As did Jan.
Jan did too. But as you pointed out earlier, I feel like Corey was volume and peppering and a couple of big knees. But ultimately, it was kind of the peppering strikes that just touch you but not load up. Jan felt like he was loading up and really cracking with some of those shots.
And that's where you get the damage, I guess, and that's where the...
Exactly.
You know, we know what makes the points. High level, super high level technical strikers, and it was, an absolute pleasure to watch. And I can imagine Sterling must be sitting there thinking, I don't really fancy either of these, thanks.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's going to have to. I mean... We've talked a lot about Sandhagen. I'm a huge Sandhagen fan, and I know I'm biased. I know you like Sandhagen as well. I mean, Jan is unbelievable. We're talking. I kind of feel like I'm talking about Sandhagen because I really, really like him, and he showcased some stuff in there that was great. And I almost feel a bit sorry for him, if I'm perfectly honest. But Jan is something else. I am looking at Jan after last night's fight and just going, I don't think there's anyone in the division that is going to give this guy a real run for his money. I just think that Jan's better than everyone. I think he had a far more dominant display against Sterling in the first fight than he did against Sandhagen. Mm-hmm. I can't see a rematch with Sterling going any differently to the way that it did in the first fight. We've got Rob Font kind of facing Jose Aldo, I think, is in December. Mm. If Font wins that, then he should be up for a title shot next. Rob Font's put together like a 4 or 5 fight win streak and was amazing against Cody Garbrandt. But I don't see Rob Font's boxing, you know, taking on Jan's kind of Muay Thai kickboxing style and coming out on top. I think Jan wins that fight all day long. Mirab Divashvili is someone that's, a few fights off of a title fight, but maybe is someone that could come in and do something. But again, striking-wise, he's got nothing compared to Jan. He would have to wrestle and get him down and use the cardio that he does. And I just think Jan's got great defensive wrestling. He's got great trips, great takedowns himself. I think Jan's cardio is really good as well. So I just don't see how any of these guys are going to do much to Jan for a long time. I think we could potentially be looking at a long reigning champion in Peter Jan. I just can't see where anyone else's skill set causes him a huge problem. I mean, obviously, we talked about Rob Font. If he lands, which he can land, a big shot, much harder than Sandhagen, you know, everyone's got that chance to land that one punch. But I just think Jan's just too good for everyone in that division at the moment.
Okay. Should we move on to...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The next fight? I know you don't want to talk about this, mate. Let's not even bother with a jingle.
There's no jingle, no. Is there? The jingle's dead. The dream is dead. The fairy tale. Glover got his fairy tale, but the happy ending I really wanted is dead as
you
well.
You really wanted a happy ending from Hooker, didn't you? It's been
I've been dreaming it. Why do you make it sound weird? Not? Like there's a connotation to happy ending. No, what are you trying to do?
You're a fan. That's all.
Big fan.
Yeah, as am I.
Really, really big fan.
And props to him. You know, we spoke about it on the pre-show. Just, you know, everything he's gone through, staying out there. Not being around, you know, family, coaches, and taking on a fight that, as we've also discussed, I don't think many people in that division want that fight, and we saw why last night.
No one wants it. I mean, again, that was one of those fights that I thought, oh, I'm not going to be able to watch all of this because I've got to get back on stage. Oh, no, it's over within 2 minutes. It wasn't a surprise, was it? That's the thing. It's not a surprise. And it's that whole same thing with Khabib. Mm. It's not a surprise what Makhachev wants to do, but he just does it. Now, Hooker threw a low kick and Makhachev caught it. And I always think, again, if you're fighting a wrestler, throw the high kick. Don't throw the low kick. But what the fuck do I know? And as soon as he threw that low kick, boom, he was on his ass.
The speed of that takedown was ridiculous.
It was crazy. And then... I mean, he got him. I haven't really heard Hooker talk about it or Makhachev even, but his one hand was trapped behind his back and the other one was getting snapped by the Kimura. I'm assuming it was a verbal tap.
I couldn't see. The camera angle, even the replays, didn't show that side of it.
No.
So I presumed it would have been.
Did the ref just stop it and go, no, I can see where this is going? Or did Hooker go stop, or tap, or something? I don't know, but. I mean,
it had to have been stopped there, otherwise it was obviously going to be a snapped arm, and no one wants to see that, do they?
It looked like it was on its way to. It was one of those ones that make you lose your lunch. It wasn't a good one. So, look, here's the thing. We're going to talk about Makhachev because it was so amazing, and he just looks like he's the champion in waiting. But in terms of Dan Hooker, the UFC doesn't forget when people do massive favours like this. He's garnered the appreciation and the respect of so many fans across the world by stepping in and being the new BMF. A reporter said, oh, are you like the new Donald Cerrone now, in like a pre-fight press conference? And he was like, oh, no, I'm just me. I'm Dan Hooker. But I think I can see those comparisons being made, especially if he continues to have this mentality of, you know, I'll just do it anytime, anywhere. The only thing that's stopping him is he's from New Zealand. If he was American, he'd probably be fighting every 6 weeks. So I think the UFC should give him a huge fight now, a BMF fight. I'd love to see him fight Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz has, I think, only one fight left on his current deal with the UFC. Which is worrying. Sorry, there's some noise going on from my printer here. I hope you can't hear it. But there's a... What is that? But there's one fight, I think, left on Nate Diaz's deal, which I think is a stumbling block at the moment because the UFC obviously don't want to lose Nate Diaz. He's such a big draw. And Nate Diaz is probably thinking, well, I'll run down my contract, do one more fight with you. It doesn't matter who it is. And then
he'll have a test-free agency and earn an absolute fortune, or go and box a YouTuber or something and earn millions.
Is Dan Hooker a salacious enough fight?
I think what's nice about Dan Hooker for Nate Diaz is it is a winnable fight. Yeah. Like, I personally would favour Dan Hooker, but it's definitely a winnable fight for Diaz. Mm. Whereas I think Dana White was mentioning anyone in that division, being the welterweight division, is a potential opponent for Nate Diaz, blah, blah, blah. And when you think about that and the Khamzat Chimaevs and Vicente Luques and people like that that, you know, have talked about having fights with Nate Diaz previously, you kind of think to yourself, I don't know that I want to see it. Mm. Whereas I do want to see Dan Hooker, Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
I really want to see Dan Hooker, Nate Diaz. I have zero interest in Khamzat Chimaev or even really Vicente Luque taking on Nate Diaz. But Dan Hooker, sign me up all day long. Make that the headline of the pay-per-view. I would buy it.
So, getting back to Makhachev, let's arguably, obviously, I think it's safe to say his biggest win so far in his UFC career.
Yep.
So this now throws him in the mix with some big names.
Yep.
What do you see is next for him? The winner of would have been
what? Gaethje Chandler.
Yeah, of course. Sorry, went blank then.
I think it depends on how those fights go. We discussed it on the pre-fight show. I think there's permutations to the Gaethje-Chandler fight and the Oliveira-Poirier fight that means that Makhachev could step straight into a title shot. However, Dana White said the next thing for Makhachev is like a top five or top three guy. Third ranked is Beneil Dariush. The only stumbling block there is I think they have the same management, which they might only want them to fight if there's a title involved. But if it's 100% a number one contender fight, maybe they just put all that stuff to bed. Dariush Makhachev is definitely a number one contender fight. I think they're both brilliant. I think it's a really interesting fight as well, because Dariush, I mean, I say it every time we said it about potentially Gaethje versus Khabib. I remember when Tony was going to first Khabib, and now we've got it with Makhachev. We think, oh, this guy might be able to outdo Makhachev's wrestling or blah, blah, blah. And it never happens, and they make it look so easy. So on paper, Dariush could do it, but who knows?
It's that thing that, you know, in regards to UFC, it felt like we had it with Ronda for a long time. Certainly with boxing, I remember, you know, in the sort of late 80s, early 90s, like everybody that got in the ring with Tyson, it wasn't a case of like if, it was when. And it was like, and we had that with Khabib, obviously, and it feels like that's what we've got now. It's like he's going to get that takedown and you're going to sleep. Like, he's going to stop you. And
Yeah.
Interesting. I thought he looked incredible. Great seeing Hasbulla in the octagon.
Yeah. And then it kicked off between him and Abdu afterwards as well. You know, his little rival, he was there as well.
Oh, incredible.
So it kicked off between them at the end of it. And oddly, I think Amir Khan, British boxer Amir Khan, got a video of them two trying to get at each other. So that was quite that must have been an amazing scene. Amir Khan's just probably there pointing the camera at these guys.
Oh, incredible.
And it's all kicking off. So, yeah, that was all good fun as well. But, yeah, Makhachev's no joke, man. You look at that kind of top five or six. Charles Oliveira, Dustin Poirier, Gaethje, Chandler, Beneil Dariush. Who out of them is a favourite against Makhachev?
Yeah.
No one.
So,
no one.
Just reading here, somebody's wrote here, so Makhachev might need a bit of good fortune. In his perfect world, Chandler beats Gaethje next week, whilst Charles Oliveira defends the title against Poirier in December. UFC won't book Oliveira versus Chandler rematch after they just fought for the vacant belt. So Makhachev will be the likely candidate to step in.
That is exactly what I said in the pre-fight show, guys. But, you know.
We need to have a little smug jingle. Like.
Blake told you so jingle. That's exactly right. There's no point in doing Chandler Oliveira for the belt again. It makes no sense. It only recently happened.
But if Gaethje wins, I think he's going straight into the title shot because he's a bigger name than everyone else. So yeah, I think Gaethje will get a title shot if he wins, but if he doesn't, it's kind of all up for grabs, really. And but Benil Dariush is the guy that's kind of the unsung one. Like, I mean, he's put together a great win streak. He's a really great fighter, but he's the least recognizable name out of everyone we've mentioned there. And he's ranked third. And maybe Makhachev's thinking, look, I'm bigger than you. And he would have a point, so maybe he wouldn't bother fighting him. Who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But the top of the lightweight division is really good, but I just feel like very soon we're going to be in the same position we were a little while ago, where the dominance gets a little bit dull, and we're going to see Makhachev just defend in similar fashion every time. And I know there's a lot of people out there that's like, oh, yeah, no, but we need to, you know, enjoy just the greatness of that. And I get that. And you can say that about Valentina Shevchenko and Amanda Nunes as well. But I just like to see more competitive fights. And I worry that if Makhachev is as good as everyone thinks he is at the moment, then we're not going to see competitive fights. And that's going to just take something away from the sport, you know, when we're going into these fights going, well, we know who's going to win.
I mean, if we want to talk about underwhelming fights, should we talk about the next fight? Because for me, it just didn't do anything. I thought it was a really dull fight. I'm talking about Volkov Tabura.
Oh, mate. Do you know what? I've just realised. I never watched it.
Unbelievable.
And I forgot to get it. I forgot to watch it. I was just like, why have I got no notes? I've got notes here. I've got you saying it's underwhelming. I'm like, next fight I've got is Chimaev. That wasn't underwhelming. That was fucking immense. Like, that was nuts,
yeah,
that
I
fight.
Mean, it was drab. And then, neither of them looked like they wanted it.
No wonder I didn't watch it.
And
I know Volkov won, which I think, you know, a lot of us were expecting. But yeah, that's bad, isn't it? I haven't watched it.
You didn't miss a lot, mate. And it's a shame because I think, you know, a good win there, you know, could have had some good consequences come of it. But yeah, that fight, when people are talking about this event, no one's going to mention that fight because there was too much either side of it. And and so, yeah, you haven't seen it and I was underwhelmed by it. So let's get on to something that was fucking incredible.
Go on. Sorry, Volkov and Tybura fans. I know you're all listening. Khamzat Chimaev, what the fuck? That was unbelievable. Yeah. I felt like he was maybe incredibly clever in the build-up. The build-up was getting really personal. Like, it was the complete opposite to Blachowicz Teixeira. It felt like they were really, as much as there was the language barrier, you kind of feel like if they were speaking the same language a lot of the time, it would have got even worse. But there was a lot of heat there. They were clearly going for each other. Li Jingliang really didn't like being, I think, the underdog in a fight where he was like, I've earned my spot in like the top 10, 15 of the UFC. This guy's just come in and beaten. You know, I know we know Rhys McKee and Phillips because we're British MMA fans, but the global MMA audience doesn't know them. And therefore, to him, it would have been that he's beaten kind of no ones. And yet he's the favourite going into the fight, but he showed why. I mean, that was unbelievable. And I think what he did is he prepared Li Jingliang for like a war. I think he prepared him for like a stand-up striking battle where he thought Chimaev was going to come and try and take his head off. And he didn't. And he suckered him in. And the first thing he did within seconds was double leg takedown. And it just lifting him up and walking him over to Dana White and slamming him down on the floor and shouting at Dana White things like, I'm going to take on everyone and all this is my octagon and all this stuff. Just having a chat with him. Like what if I was picking up my daughter and just kind of moving her around the room. That's how easily Chimaev seemed to deal with Li Jingliang. And it was terrifying and amazing at the same time.
The minute he walked to the octagon, as he was coming out, star quality was there. And then to do that, when you've got him, you know, picking him up and walking him over and talking to Dana, then slamming him, it's like that's what fight fans want to see. They want to see some madness. They want to see, like, you know, these superstars in the making. And yeah, he's going to follow the path of Conor and Sugar Sean, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Dana White said again that, like, in terms of, like, the traffic they get on their websites or their social media and all that kind of stuff, the pre-fight stare downs, Khamzat Chimaev hit like 1 million views. The closest one to that was Makhachev with 200,000. That's the difference. Chimaev somehow has just attracted the attention of the MMA world, and they are just thinking he's going to be an absolute superstar. To be five times the amount of Makhachev. And if you're someone that hashtags any, like, we have to hashtag stuff every now and again when we're putting up posts and stuff like that, because you want to try and, you know, get people interested in the podcast and all that kind of stuff. And so you do, like, hashtag whatever. If you do hashtag Makhachev, it's got like 240 something like thousand mentions or something like that. Like, lots of people are constantly talking about Makhachev. Whereas if you put in Li Jingliang, it'll be like 1,000. So for Chimaev to have five times the amount of views on his stare down than what Makhachev had, that just shows you how much of a star this man is. And it makes me think, now he's in the top 10, or Dana White said he's going to be in the top 10 as of Tuesday when the new rankings come out. I just think stick a rocket to him and just, you know, let him soar. Just like, I think it makes sense to go for Neil Magny, because Neil Magny wanted that fight, and I don't think he's booked up for a fight at the moment. So just give him Neil Magny, really test him. If Magny wins, it says a lot. I mean, Magny's ranked 8th. Give him Magny. Just, I think that just makes so much sense. And if he beats Magny, maybe you give him like a Gilbert Burns, who's number 2 at the moment. And do that. I still think Leon Edwards deserves the winner of Colby versus Kamaru. If Colby were to win, I think Kamaru probably gets an immediate rematch, so we see what happens there. But Leon Edwards should be next up. No ifs, no buts. Edwards has got Masvidal coming up, hasn't he? So if Edwards wins, he should be next up, because now he's booked in the Masvidal fight. Obviously, if he loses, it's game over. Chimaev, if he's 10th on Tuesday, give him Neil Magny, who's 8th.
Magny's the perfect fight. If he wins that, he should gateway fight Magny to the big boys.
Yeah. And then after that, give him one more fight against like a top 5 guy. And that's it. Give him a title shot. I mean, let's do it. It's exciting. Yeah. This guy is special. He talks the talk. He dominates. Isn't the stat something like he's done like around 200 strikes he's given out in the octagon in the UFC, and only 2 or 3 have been landed on him in 4 fights? That's nuts. Yeah. That's the most mental stat. In 4 fights, he's hit people like 200 times, and he's been hit like 3 times. That's mental. So,
funnily enough, he's also 50 grand richer. And walking over to Dana and having chat, then make no mistake, that was one of the most exciting fights on the card, wasn't it? It was hyped and it delivered. And yeah, he's a superstar. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, the really interesting thing is the way that the betting lines sort of work on these things. If he fought Kamaru Usman next month, I think the odds would be really, really close. I'm not saying the fight would be close. I would favour Usman. Usman's done enough to warrant being the favourite in that fight. But I bet you, the way the betting lines work and all that kind of stuff, I reckon it would be really close in the odds.
Yeah.
You I don't know. Your face seemed to say you weren't 100% convinced.
I want to see more from him. Like, I think.
But do you not think the way that betting works?
Yeah, definitely. Right,
stuff,
definitely.
It would be close. That's just the way those things work.
But yeah.
People would put money on it.
100%. And why wouldn't you after what you saw last night?
Absolutely.
But yeah, totally agree. Magny, that's always been your gateway fighter. He's where you test yourself. And and I'll also say that I wouldn't fancy Magny to win that either.
Not anymore. No, not after that performance. I think Hamzat's the favourite in pretty much every fight he does now, aside from Usman. Yeah. I really think if it's Hamzat versus Colby, Hamzat's the favourite. Hamzat versus Leon, Hamzat's the favourite.
He was meant to fight Leon, wasn't he?
He was, but then Leon got COVID and then Hamzat got COVID, and it was that bout of COVID that made him nearly retire.
Yeah.
He said he was going to retire. But there was no signs of that. I mean, he seems to have fully recovered. That was unbelievable. Yeah. What a story.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit amfam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
And yeah, we're watching. It does feel like we're watching a real star. And in 2 years' time, we could be talking about Hamzat Chimaev, the welterweight champion of the world, defending his title and who's going to take him. And it's going to be exciting. It's exciting. Whether it gets stopped by the next one or two opponents or not, I think this guy's got a really exciting career ahead of him. And I think he's definitely going to challenge for a belt at some point.
Absolutely. Well, opening the main card, we had Ankalaev versus Uzdemir. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I assumed that there'd be a finish from Ankalaev, to be honest. I was surprised that that Uzdemir kind of survived as long as he did. I mean, other than like the first minute of the fight where Uzdemir seemed like he kind of caught him with a shot and Ankalaev seemed a little bit rocked, it just felt like one-way traffic. And again, it just feels like Ankalaev is just one of those guys that can be very dominant. Other than that fight with Paul Craig, I think he's won every single fight he's had in the UFC. And even that Paul Craig fight, as we mentioned on a pre-fight show, he was winning that fight. And then Paul Craig got that submission right in the last second of the fight. I do think Ankalaev now, with a performance like that, hasn't done himself any favours in a way, because no one's going to want to fight him. He's in that position now where it's like no one wants to fight him. So the only thing I can think is if Blachowicz is thinking, oh, I'm 38 years old, if I want a title shot, I need to make a big statement. Otherwise, I'm going to get left behind by these younger contenders that are just coming through. So if Blachowicz wants to fight soon and get back in the title picture, I think Ankalaev's the fight. Because if he beats Ankalaev, everyone's like, oh, Blachowicz isn't done. Yeah. If he goes out there and beats like an Anthony Smith or, you know, someone like along those kind of lines, I think people go, well, you need to go and get one or two more wins before we take you too seriously anymore. But Ankalaev is like, that's the guy, him and Prohazka, they're the hype trains of the light heavyweight division. If you derail that hype train, I think you can get straight back in the top. If Blachowicz beats Ankalaev, I don't think anyone would bat an eyelid at him either rematching Glover, or better yet, what in terms of like more chance of this happening for Jan Blachowicz. If Prohazka's beaten Glover and Blachowicz has beaten Ankalaev, that fight makes all the sense in the world, and you just make that the fight, and he gets straight back into a title shot with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, but I mean, but again, Ankalaev's not done himself too many favours, because he was just like, oh, I'll fight whoever, I deserve someone in front of me, or whatever it was that he was saying. But call someone out, man. I don't think that the Rakic-Smith fight has been confirmed yet. So, but there's talk of it happening before Christmas. If you're Ankalaev, I would have just call out Rakic. Mm. Rakic is like the number two or three guy, yeah, or something like that, number three guy. Call out Rakic. Put that in people's minds and they go, yeah, he's right. They're two guys that are doing really, really well. That's a fight we want to see. And he didn't do that. And it's just like, it's like what we've seen with Jack Shaw or Arnold Allen. Like, we want these guys to call people out. We don't want them to trash talk necessarily. There's no, you could do a respectful call out. You can do whatever you want to do. But if you don't mention names, if you just say, I'll fight whoever, whatever the UFC wants, blah, 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 it just doesn't get anyone excited for your next fight. And it doesn't put pressure on the UFC to go, we should give him this ranked opponent or that 100%. Ranked opponent. And I think it's a mistake.
Because once they call someone out, then social media gets involved. Then everybody's going, oh, I want to see that fight. I want to see that fight. I think he'll beat him. I think he'll lose to him. And it's like, that's when the pressure starts to find its way through to the UFC. And then it will have an influence on the, you know, on the matchmakers. Yep. And yeah. And I mean, I thought his striking was far superior to Uzdemir's. He was quicker and he was just beating into the punch. But yeah, I didn't find it the most exciting of fights, to be honest. I thought it was okay.
Yeah.
Well, where are we at? So we're over 50 minutes in now. So do we, just looking,
Lerone
I mean,
Murphy?
Before, yeah. I mean, if looking through the prelims, there were some cracking fights on there. I thought Amanda Ribas looked really good. I thought her striking was great last night.
She did.
Yeah, and it looked like Werner had nothing to answer it to. Ribas just seemed to be that little bit quicker and that little bit more precise, and her movement seemed better. yeah. But apart from that, rather than sort of like breaking down every fight on there, I think we should just talk about our boy Lerone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, this is the one that I missed and came back to a note on the little desk where my stuff is in the dressing room saying KO flying knee or something like that from one of the people in the dressing room. And then I went back and I watched it. I mean,
tell me what you made of the first round.
That was concerning. That was concerning. Like, I know Amir Khani is a good wrestler. I don't necessarily think of him as like one of the top wrestlers in the division. I think of him as maybe I'm wrong. I think of him as a good wrestler, good grappler, all that stuff. But I wouldn't put him up there as like, oh God, this is like number one or two of the best wrestlers in the division. And if Murphy is thinking he's going into the top 15, top 10 now, in what is a very... The featherweight division is stacked. It is absolutely stacked. It's brilliant. There's going to be people in there with just as good, if not better, wrestling credentials than Amir Khani. And it makes me think, I hope he's happy with the win. I hope, you know, he might have got a little bit of something extra on the side as like a bonus no one knows about, because Dana did say there's a few other people on the card that we're taking care of, and that was a really great knockout. So I hope he's getting a little bit of extra money. I think he deserves it. But I think the biggest takeaway should be, shit, man, go to America, go to Dagestan, go to wherever you need to go, and get a month or so of solid wrestling training in. Just because people watching that will go, like, I know that he's a long way off fighting champions and stuff like that, but someone with the skill set of like an Alexander Volkanovski, who wins most of his fights by striking, mm-hmm. but can definitely wrestle really well, will think, if I want an easy night at the office, I'm just going to take this guy down. Mm-hmm. And credit to Lerone for having the intelligence to feint a couple of times and work out where Amekhani was going to be so he could land that knee. But that's not going to work on everyone. You have to be able to, as DC was saying, break the lock of the hands, separate the hands, and be able to twist and turn away from like body lock positions and stuff like that. And that's I think, a big takeaway. I really hope that he looks at that and is improving that.
Yeah.
Going forward.
Yeah. Who would you like to see him fight next?
Well, that's another one. Why didn't he call someone out? You're in an absolutely stacked division. So if you don't call for a name, I'm not just saying, and you can give a couple of names, but don't just say, I deserve a top 15 now. Call out someone specific.
Bruce Leroy.
Put it out
fight
there.
Fight Bruce Leroy. That's a fight I want to see.
Well, the only... I mean, that would be a great fight. The only thing with that is I think Bruce Leroy's probably earned a guy a bit ahead of him because of what he's done over the last possibly. However long. So I think he should be getting someone forward in the rankings mm-hmm. rather than behind him. I think maybe Sadiq Youssef is a good shout. Sadiq Youssef hasn't fought since his loss to Arnold Allen. Sadiq Youssef is maybe, what, like 12th? Something like that? 11th or 12th? I don't know. I don't think he's got a fight booked. Lerone had a... I know he had to deal with the wrestling, but he didn't take much damage from what I remember. He's fought for like 6 minutes. If I was him, I'd be thinking, let's get in there quick. Let's see if what Sadiq Youssef is about. Yeah. He's not got a fight booked.
Sadiq Youssef rated 17, I think.
Are you looking at Tapology?
I am, yeah. Oh, there again, I'm just... Obviously, that's
Tapology
not UFC.
Tapology is not the UFC. Not the UFC rankings. And Tapology is based on popularity as well, believe it or not. So it's like fans going, who do we like the most? That's not the right one, but... Sadiq Youssef is ranked 12th in the UFC rankings.
Where's Andre Fili in the rankings?
Not ranked.
Good fight.
It is a good fight. And look, they're good fights and they're good names and all that stuff. But Lerone is what? Is he 4 wins or 3 wins in the UFC? I know he had that draw on his debut. Yeah. That I think he took a short notice. So I think that should be actually held in good regard. But... He's 3 wins in the UFC now in divisions like bantamweight, featherweight, lightweight. Yeah, you probably have to put 4 or 5 wins together before you fight a ranked guy. But if he feels like he deserves a ranked guy now, I think Sadiq Youssef is a good shout. Bryce Mitchell is a grappler. I'd probably stay away from him a little bit for now, not for your
next
fight.
That was his third win after the draw.
Yeah, so he's had 4 fights. He's 4 unbeaten. But 3 wins. Maybe he'll have to fight another unranked guy before he can get a top 15. But I would have no problem with him getting a top 15 guy right now. Shane Burgos has got a fight coming up. Alex Caceres is just come off that win from last week. As you said, that could be a great fight for him. But I think Alex Caceres could also fight forward in the rankings a bit more. Evloev, I don't think has a fight book, so maybe that's a good option. But I think Sadiq Youssef is the one. That's what I'd go for. But it's a shame he never called him out, because then it just leaves it to the fates and the UFC matchmakers, and they might not have an idea for Lerone Murphy. He might not be high up on their agendas. They're dealing with a lot of big fighters. And whereas if he sowed that seed and said, Sadiq Youssef, I think that'd be a great fight, blah, 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 blah. And he, again... No trash talk. Respectfully, I think it was great. I think his fight against Arnold Allen was really good. I'd love to test myself against him. He can get one back against an Englishman. And if I win, I get a number next to my name. Yep. Boom, done. And then it just makes sense to me to do that. But obviously, they have their reasons to not do it. I think it'd be the way to go.
I do think, like, you know, and I certainly don't want to bring any kind of sort of take anything away from that, you know, incredible KO he got last night, but that first round was slightly worrying, and I was thinking, I hope the rest of the fight doesn't go like this. And, like, you know, to kind of echo what you said, Lerone was smart enough to go, right, this is what I'm going to do, and then feints brought him straight onto it, which was beautiful. And that's, you know, that clash of styles is what makes exciting fights. But I definitely think, looking back across the whole card last night, get yourself out to to Russia and get some wrestling under your belt yeah. because that yeah. shit works.
Yeah, that does work. It works, man. You've got to be able to defend that stuff nowadays. The other thing I just wanted to point out is great corner work. Great corner work from Manchester Top Team, because they highlighted what I think DC highlighted in the commentary as well. When he switched to Southpaw, that's when Amir Khani was yep. shooting him. Was yep. it? No, when he switched to Orthodox. I can't remember. Basically, whatever one it was, when he switched to one stance, that's when Amir Khani went in yep. for like a single leg or whatever it was. I think maybe when he switched to Orthodox.
Had Luke Barnett in his straight corner, in. Didn't he?
I did, yeah. did he? I didn't know yeah. that. But it was just like, when he switched stances, when he was in Southpaw, Amir Khani wasn't interested in the wrestling. As soon as he switched to Orthodox, Amir Khani was shooting him for that takedown. And the corner spotted it and said that to him at the end of round one. And I think that's what really helped Laron set up that knee. Because he went, if I switch and then I switch back, that's almost like a little feint. And he did duck in and then he did it and waited for him to commit and threw that knee that landed flush. And yeah, great KO.
And the timing of it, just incredible. Like, you know, that ain't an easy yeah. thing to get on the button. Otherwise, everybody would be KOing these wrestlers. And that's just precision. And timing yeah. and obviously them feints led him onto it. Like, yeah, brilliant, super hyped for him. Didn't need to spit out any bullets at the end either.
No
Well,
is there anything else you want to talk about? Because there is one thing that I wanted to mention that was quite a big storyline but in a smaller fight.
So we're going to talk about Kislev, right?
Yeah, boy. Yeah, the referee, Vyacheslav Kislev, I believe his name was, or something like that.
I thought I weren't going to attempt the first name. I thought I'll just go for the second.
I'm amazed you went for the second one, to be honest. I was like, oh, good on you, mate. But he was removed from duty. He had two fights to ref that night, and he only did one because Mark Goddard, I think, pulled him from officiating another fight because... What we saw in the Dos Santos versus Saint-Denis fight wasn't right. I mean, credit to Saint-Denis. He showed real toughness. He kept going and was a real, an absolute warrior. Paul Felder kept saying on the commentary, you know, this guy's like a special forces soldier in France. He doesn't know the meaning of the word quit. He's probably been through torture training and all that kind of stuff. This guy was just going to keep going and keep going and keep going. But... the referee should definitely have stopped that fight in round two when he was just getting lit up and he looked wobbly and it looked bad and it looked like he didn't really want to be there. And even Dos Santos, I think, was looking at the ref at points as if to say, are you joking? You want me to keep hitting this guy? And it wasn't right at all. And I've never seen Kislev before. What I imagine is it's one of those situations where regions... have referees that, whether that be America, Russia, Abu Dhabi, whatever it is, regions have referees that they want to be on the big shows because it makes their smaller shows look better when you get recognizable referees, all that kind of stuff going on. We've seen it in America in the fight between Paul Craig and Jamahal Hill, where I don't know if it was Florida or whatever, we had that referee from either Florida or wherever it was, or maybe it was Vegas. And it wasn't a guy you regularly see on the UFC. And this was the Kislev one. Maybe it was like a Russian thing. There's so many Russian fighters. I know that Russia and Abu Dhabi and the Emirates, that they have some kind of connection going on there in that world. And maybe that was a favour. Maybe he refs in local fights over in Abu Dhabi. I don't know. But he wasn't someone I've recognised from other fights. And he did a really bad job, I think. Not just with not stopping the fight, but also the weird point deduction as well.
Made no sense. I'm sure he'll never, ever ref in the UFC again. And to be honest, I don't think in any promotion that's worth its weight, you're ever going to see him again because, yeah, that was disgraceful. Interesting to know, because obviously, you know, we was hearing DC and Felder saying stop the fight. And we heard Dan Hardy say stop the fight, and that didn't necessarily do him any favours.
The difference being that I suppose there was a crowd in.
Yeah, half full.
But there was a crowd. So the ref probably didn't hear stop the fight. Yeah. Whereas with Dan's one, it was in an empty arena and the ref, clear as day, probably Herb Dean, heard him say stop the fight. But yeah, I ultimately, there is no difference to what DC, Paul Felder and Dan Hardy on different occasion did. There's no difference. But Dan's obviously had the UFC have sort of punished Dan for that. I don't think they'll be punishing DC or Felder.
I did see...
make of that what you will.
Also, I see that there's been some beef between Gaethje and DC. Before I'd even seen it, I was just... I was on my little WhatsApp chat just saying that, like, I didn't think DC was very good last night.
Really?
Yeah, I think Paul Felder's incredible. I think Anik's great. But yeah, I don't know. Sometimes it just feels...
What didn't you like about it?
I just feel he's a little one-sided sometimes, and he doesn't give fighters their kind of... If he's talking about a hyped fighter that he's obviously excited by, he doesn't credit the other fighter as much as I feel he should. And
I think that's valid. And the other thing I would say to that is there was a lot of fighters last night from the Khabib camp. Mm. And Khabib splits his time between his gym out in Russia and AKA, where, you know, he trained with DC for years. So I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the guys fighting last night, definitely Makhachev, Tugov or whatever his name is, and a few others, were people that DC knows and he's probably friends with. So, yeah, is that a problem? Should you be allowed to commentate on fights when you know fighters like from your gym or whatever? Maybe that shouldn't happen. But then I found out something else. Paul Felder had someone from his gym on the card and you never would have known it.
Really?
Andrei Petrovsky, who beat in the... prelims. Was it the Fight Pass prelim?
Fight Pass. Yeah, it was the fight before Lerone.
Fight Pass prelim. Yeah. He won a decision fight. I don't think you ever would have known from the commentary that Paul Felder was a teammate of his. So maybe it's just a DC thing. Is Felder, quote unquote, I don't know, like more professional? But I love DC's kind of like childlike personality. He gets very excited.
He gets more emotionally involved.
I buy into it. I like it. And part of me doesn't mind it, but it shouldn't affect his critique of the other fighters, and maybe it does. So maybe that is an issue that needs ironing out.
All right, well, I'm going to go and do some prep for... tomorrow we're going to be recording the pre-show for another ridiculous card. So I'm going to go and prep for that. And you're going to go and get your Dan Hooker tattoo, yeah?
I'm going to go and get my Dan Hooker tattoo on my finger like Tyron Woodley.
Right, if this is your first time listening to the show, then go check out... our back catalogue, because when it's not just me and Blake doing pre and post shows, sometimes with the pre and post shows we have two of our pals on. We have fight commentator Brian Lacey and MMA superfan and actor, rapper, podcaster Scroobius Pip. And also in the back catalogue you get access to hearing some amazing chats with the aforementioned Tyrone Woodley, Alexander Volkanovsky, Angela Hill. The list goes on. Dan Hardy, who we've just been speaking about as well, one of our fave episodes is that very one. KO specialist Lerone Murphy, obviously coming off of that monster knee last night. We have a great chat with Lerone and talk about how he's transformed his life, which is remarkable. So many fighters that either fought last night or are going to be further up the rankings. Obviously, looking at Lerone, we've also got Arnold Allen. Great chat with Arnold, haven't we?
Yep.
The list goes on.
Paul Craig, Molly McCann, Paddy Pimblett. Some of these guests we've had on twice as well. So we've done in-depth chats with them where we've really talked about their life and career and really get into kind of the nitty-gritty of what makes them the person and fighter that they are. And then also we've had some special interviews with some of those guests that have come on a second time that are specifically about a certain fight card coming up, like the September 4th card that was supposed to be the London card that became the Vegas card and all that stuff. And people like Mark Goddard, we've had the chat with Mark Goddard was fantastic. John Gooden, who was in the, not the commentary booth, but was on the broadcast last night. John Gooden, shout out to him. He's been on. And then just a plethora of really fantastic and brilliant fighters and people within the MMA sphere. So check them out on the podcast and also on YouTube. If you want to check them out on YouTube and actually see our ugly mugs, then you can go and do that.
Absolutely. And you can also keep up to speed with everything that's coming out. I mean, the best thing to do is subscribe. But if you forget to do that, just make sure you follow us on the socials, because we always post on there and we've got new episodes out. And on fight nights, we'll post bits and pieces up if we're staying up for it. And other than that, we're pretty active on the socials. So also drop us a message on there. You know, if there's something you like about the podcast, let us know. Oh, and if there's someone you'd like to hear us chat to, drop us a message and we'll have a nutter. Back next time?
Back next time, very, very soon, for the pre-268 card, Usman versus Covington 2, Rose versus Zhang Weili, Gaethje versus Chandler, and the debut of Ian Garry, another one of our guests. So, yeah, loads to talk about in literally, like, tomorrow.
Bye.